Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Good, Tay, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good.
Got the holiday are upon us. They've jumped us. They're all around us. I don't know.
We came out for one holiday right into another holiday. There's no rest for the weary.
They start coming and they don't stop coming. That's the season.
Yeah, this time of year, once you hit Thanksgiving, it's just a quick slide right into Christmas.
Yep.
Then you hit the bleakness of January and the cold and the snow and no more holidays and until Memorial Day. And so enjoy it while you can.
My birthday's in January.
Yeah, that's true.
That's something to look forward to. I age. The festivus of me aging.
Well, I'll celebrate your aging. I don't want to age anymore. I've done all the aging. You can have my birthday.
I mean, I don't want to age more. It's there. It's the only thing. Like, it sucks to come out of the holiday season. So my little silver lining is, well, I guess I get a birthday. I don't know. Yeah. Having a birthday in January sucks, but I guess I get one. It's fine.
Well, you do get one, whether you want it or not.
Yeah, you don't get to choose.
That's right.
But it is the holiday season. It is a time for revelry and celebration. Did you do any revelry or celebrating this week?
Well, I did have some special Christmas beers.
Oh,
Sydney had come across them when she was out. It was a Christmas vacation themed package of beers. And the cans had different pictures and catchphrases from Christmas Vacation. And it was a pecan toffee stout. So it was pretty good. So I enjoyed that and, you know, got to read all the sayings of ones that we know so well since we watch Christmas Vacation every year, usually more than once.
That sounds good. I put up my little tree in my apartment, and I got some Christmas beers also while I'm.
Oh yeah,
I got a couple. There, it's called the Mad Elf, and it's by Trogs Brewery.
Yeah,
and it's like a it's very seasonal spiced beer, lots of nutty spicy flavors. It's 10% alcohol. I got two Mad Elves. Like, oh, I'll just have a cute little night by myself putting up my tree. I got through the first Mad Elf and I was like, I need to sit down. I shouldn't be allowed to handle delicate porcelain orbs right now. Because one Mad Elf did me in. So while it was a delicious beer, it's a one beer is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I forgot. Mom and I did take Riley out one night to the rooftop bar here in town. And they had some a Christmas spiced beer on tap, so I had a glass of that. That was really good.
Yeah, I love Christmas style beers. I forget that they're usually giant. They're usually very alcoholic, but they are delicious, mm-hmm. And they're deceptively delicious because they always hide behind like sweet flavors and fruit flavors and nutty and spice. It's like, ooh, this is so nice. Oh no, I'm so drunk.
Yeah, this one was 7.5, I believe.
That'll do it. That'll do it.
And it was very spicy. I like that though in a beer.
No, same. Well, this is a little today's topic. It's not quite a seasonal flavor, but it was inspired just because I saw a bottled cocktail version of it at my local liquor store, and it was clear. There was no color to it. And I thought, that's not right. That's not what that drink should look like. I don't think we ever talked about that drink. So I wanted to talk about the drink that was done wrong in the bottled cocktail. I won't name the brand because that's not what we do here. But it was the Aviation. And I also want to talk about the main, sort of the most prominent liqueur in it, which is Creme de Violette. Now, Dad, are you familiar with either of these things, Creme de Violette or the Aviation?
Never heard of either one. Now, I've heard of Aviation Gin, but I don't know if that's related, but I have not heard of a drink called the Aviation, and I have never heard, I've heard of the Creme de Mint and Creme de Caco and some of the other ones. I never say someday, that right, do I?
Someday I will get you to say Creme de Cacao. Creme in a way that doesn't sound like creme de cacao, creme de cacao,
creme de cacao,
creme de cacao,
creme de cow.
You know what? You do you. No judgment.
That one just doesn't roll off my tongue. I don't know what it is. I can't say that word.
That's okay. We'll get there, or we won't. No worries. So today we're gonna. And this is a beloved cocktail, I think, for cocktail geeks, and also a beloved spirit, but it's also a bit of a weirdo, and that's why I love it. So to start with, so an Aviation cocktail it's a gin cocktail. We'll get back to you. You brought up Aviation gin. We'll come back to that. But the cocktail way predates the gin. The Aviation cocktail it's relatively simple. It's gin, lemon, maraschino liqueur, and creme de violette. Now, the creme de violette, and it's sort of ingredient of the day, it doesn't pop up all that often in cocktails, but it is the thing that really makes an Aviation unique. In fact, it kind of is the reason behind the name. So creme de violette is, as you may have guessed, it's a violet liqueur. So it's usually violet steeped in brandy. It can be a green neutral spirit and then sweetened to a creme liqueur level, which, as we talked about, like the de creme just means there's a lot of sugar. It doesn't mean it's cream based. So it's a very sweet cream liqueur, usually based in brandy, but can be grain neutral. So it gives, in the Aviation, this nice, soft, violet, light blue color to the drink that looks like the sky, hence the Aviation.
That's kind of a leap, if you ask me. Kind of a jump.
No, I mean, it is a beautiful light blue color. I think it makes sense. Like, oh, it's the Aviation. It's about the sky.
Well, I would have called it the sky.
That's not as cool. Maybe that's not as cool. But, you know, I want a sky. I want an Aviation. Like, come on. That
sounds more sophisticated.
Well, but before we'll get into the history of the cocktail a little bit more, but I want to talk about the spirit first and sort of the culture that led to it. And we're going to go way back, just like with the history of violets themselves. Because violets were really cool for a while. Like, they were the thing.
I never knew that.
There was a violet craze. I mean, before the violet craze, like, the violets have been cultivated and used in herbal remedies dating all the way back to, like, the Greeks and Romans. They're pretty prolific around the world. They're found throughout the Northern Hemisphere, as well as South America, Hawaii, Australia, and the Andes. And then, like, they're real, like, violets came into cultural prominence really in, like, the 1800s. You know, you had, like, Napoleon in 1814 chose to cover the grave of his wife Josephine with violets. This is why he's sometimes referred to as the corporal violet. But the Victorian age loved violets. Their violet perfume, violet candy, violet-inspired poetry and prose. Shakespeare mentions violets in several of his major works as, like, big themes, from Hamlet to Midsummer Night's Dream, Twelfth Night, because they symbolize both, like, they're sort of romantic, but also that their scent and their beauty were very, like, liminal, they're momentary. So, like, sort of the beauty and brevity of life, there was a sort of sadness to the violet. Just a very Victorian vibe with the violet.
I never heard about a violet craze like that.
Well,
and if somebody offered me violet candy, I don't think I would be like, oh, yeah, man, I'll take some of that. I'd be like, what?
I mean, Dad, you might be a little, like, you know, a little bit older than me, but I don't think you were alive for the violet craze of the 1890s.
Was that before or after the bubonic plague? I was alive during that.
Yeah, were you? No, there's even like a court case in the time that was popular in the newspaper, like, of a woman who stole a very expensive bottle of violet perfume. And she she opted to go to prison versus surrender her bottle of violet perfume. It was so popular at the time.
Man, it was almost like currency.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and so it's no surprise that around this time period, you know, again, we're talking like mid to late 1800s, distilling culture, all of our herbal liqueurs are very popular, all of our monks are monking, our amaros are amarine, liqueurs
are
popular.
The monks are monkeying about.
Yeah. So to make a violet liqueur would be a natural thing from this. So violet liqueurs hit the market around the same time period. And, you know, they're again, simply made, just usually violets soaked in spirit, usually brandy, and then sweetened. And they are beloved both for their scent, their flavor, and their beautiful, vibrant purple color. And they're consumed very simply, like either straight, just, you know, as a sipping beverage, or with dry vermouth. That was a popular way of drinking it at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and they get the violets in there by macerating them, and that kind of sounds like violence on violets.
I see what you did there. You waited for that, didn't you?
Well, macerated just sounds very aggressive, you know.
I just always consume macerated with masticated, which means to chew.
To spit, like, yeah.
Like they didn't chew them up. It's not like, I mean, that is actually a traditional technique in some liquor production. It's actually pretty cool. But they did not, in fact, chew the violets. They just mashed the shit out of them.
Did they walk on them like you do with grapes making wine?
No, you just beat the shit out of the violets.
Yeah. Well, see there, that you are making violence on the violets.
I guess, or just let him. I mean, or just let them infuse. I don't know. It depends, you know.
What's that I smell on your breath? Violets? Yes, I've been drinking them.
So creme de violette. Before we get into more of the history, the flavor itself, it is a bit more of a divisive flavor because it's very perfumey. It is very floral. It's some people, like, I think naysayers of creme de violette drinks, will describe them as like drinking hand soap. I don't think that. I think floral has a place. I think you can offset floral notes properly and you taste the good parts and you kind of bury the bad parts. But it's not, I think that's part of what, like, as we get to the history of it, why it didn't have staying power for a long time was because it's a very, when it had the craze of violets, that people were just all about violets in any form, that's great. But it can't really stand on its own in a cocktail without a well-made recipe. It needs to be in the hands of a skilled barman. Which leads us to the 1900s, where we, at this point, the popularity of the violet craze is starting to wane, but violet liqueur has made its way to America. You know, you've got the early days of bartending culture, and specifically into the hands of one German-born immigrant bartender who was working at the Hotel Wallace in New York by the name of Hugo Enslin. So it's actually kind of not a sad story, but a bit of a bummer that he was actually a very brilliant barman, but his recipes have sort of been reprinted and taken by more prominent barmen that followed him. And he doesn't really get the recognition he deserves. Cause the aviation was his baby. He was making in the early 1900s, like the 1910s. Mm-hmm. He was making an aviation at his bar. And then he published a book, in 1916, just called Recipes for Mixed Drinks. And this was really the last major cocktail book to be published before Prohibition, where we just sort of lost our cocktail culture for a little while.
You go.
Well, and his original specs he used an L. Bart gin, which is a London dry gin, lemon juice, and then just dashes. So he used very small measures of maraschino liqueur and creme de violette. And now post-Prohibition, his book was one of the first ones picked up by, like, the bartenders of the 30s, specifically the very legendary bartender Harry Craddock, which I don't think we've ever talked about specifically, but he comes up a lot in context. He wrote a lot of very popular recipe books.
Seems like I remember hearing as a kid about somebody that was like Harry Crash Craddock. You don't think it was him, do you?
that. Is this a joke?
No, that's a name that rings a bell with me. I don't know.
I mean, Harry Craddock was a very popular bartender who published a lot of bartending books.
Well, he might have drank a lot with all his bartender stuff. And maybe he fell into things, and so that's what they called him, was Crash Craddock.
Were you personal friends with Harry Craddock that you had a nickname for him? Where your parents were?
It's just something that bounced around in the recesses of my brain when you said Harry Craddock. I was like, that reminds me of Crash Craddock. Maybe I just made it up. Who knows?
Who knows? I don't know. Maybe that's what he's doing back in the day.
I can't even vouch for me.
Well, Harry, maybe Crash Craddock, he republished many of Anselm's original recipes in his Savoy cocktail book, came out in 1930. And, that book is sort of credited as reviving a lot of the cocktails that were sort of forgotten during Prohibition. One that he did a bit of a disservice to was the Aviation. So he wrote his recipe, the Aviation, with gin, lemon juice, and maraschino, but no creme de violette. And now you could, by this time, violet liqueur had fallen out of favor. It wasn't imported as heavily. It could have just been as simply as he couldn't find it, so he didn't include it. But this is sort of one of the first things that sort of paves the way for the proper aviation to fall out of favor and sort of get lost for a couple decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some things that they used kind of like that, but nothing that did the same thing that the creme de violette did.
Well, the things that sort of filled that void that really started in the heyday of creme de violette, like creme de Yvette, which you still see around. Creme de Yvette began in like the 1890s. It was actually made in Philadelphia. And it was made up until 1969, but it is very different. It is, for one, it's got like a very berry-forward flavor and some vanilla and some licorice, and then it just sort of has a violet overtone. So it's got a lot more going on. Sometimes it's okay that a liqueur just does one thing. Like creme de violette just does one thing. It's just violet. It is violet and sweet. That's it. The ones that kind of came in to be like, oh, we're the same thing, they really didn't. They did other things. Creme de Yvette had a lot more going on. Similarly, there's Parfait Amour, or Parfait d'Amour, which is French for perfect love. And it was it can be delicious or awful. There's no set recipe for it. It is really just floral. It can be almond. It can be just anything that you could call anything Parfait Amour. But the only really deciding thing was it was a blue-purple color. So it would get subbed in a lot for creme de violette. But, sometimes it was good, but oftentimes it was not. Oftentimes it was just a overly perfumey, heavily rose-flavored spirit. There are good Parfait Amours on the market now. But neither of these things really do what creme de violette did, which is just violets and sugar. Like, that's it. No other flavor notes. No fruit. No citrus. No nuts, just that.
So we needed somebody to bring it back because they had slowed down their production or quit producing it over in Europe then, hadn't they?
Well, it would still have been locally available, but it definitely wasn't imported. On this show specifically, a lot of our angle comes from like the American bartending. Like Americans were very much the forefront of bartending culture, and then Europe had a lot of better, more interesting spirits for a long time. It took us a while to kind of come together and be like, oh, no, I need all your spirits, and you can have my recipes. And so we're kind of in that dead zone of, like, creme de violette would have continued to have been made in certain areas of Europe, but it just was not imported for decades. It really was, by the 60s, there was none imported or made anywhere in America. And that was kind of up even through the initial stages of the sort of cocktail revolution that happened in the late 90s. Like, it still was not an ingredient that you could have access to. I mean, I remember in my early days of cocktail nerdery, like when I first moved to the city, when I was first working in restaurants, like the early 2000s, I remember asking for an aviation and getting a very, it was a pale yellow aviation. I'm like,
Something's wrong here.
Something's wrong. Yeah, this is the Harry Craddock Aviation. There's no creme de violette. And that makes sense now, thinking back, because that was probably, like 2006, 2005. Because the first major brand to be imported to the United States in recent years was in 2007, and that was House Alpens began importing Rothman & Winter's creme de violette. It's a beautiful, statuesque bottle. It's a delicious creme de violette. It's a very decent price point. It's like somewhere in the 30s, and very rarely available. But that didn't happen until 2007, so it took a while.
And in that recipe that he copied over and left out the creme de violette, it wasn't like they substituted something for it necessarily. I mean, people have tried substituting other things, but he didn't put anything else in there. So it was just the same drink, but without the creme de violette.
Well, and that's a good point to bring up, because there are some cocktails that I assumed predated the Aviation before doing my research, because they're more simpler than the Aviation. But, you know, while Craddock calls an Aviation without creme de violette just an Aviation, there's another recipe that's called a Casino that pops up in the same, like, 20s and 30s that is that. It is gin, maraschino, lemon. It has orange bitters as well, but it is that. And then there's also the Blue Moon, which is gin, creme de violette, or often creme de Yvette, that other one that's a little bit fruitier, and lemon, and that's that. So these cocktails that are a little bit simpler than the Aviation actually come after the Aviation, and they're just minus one ingredient. But there's a bit of a confusion here, because the Aviation came first with proper creme de violette, and everything else came after.
Right.
So starting fairly recently, early 2000s, we could get proper creme de violette in the States. You can order. I mean, I would say not every bar has a bottle of creme de violette, because it is a divisive spirit to this day. You know, it really just depends on how much you like very floral, perfumey flavors, and not everybody likes that. It's not as marketable as, say, like a chartreuse or like an Amari, you know? It's a little bit more distinct.
Well, and they said you should also be very judicious in how you use it, because it's like you said, it would taste like soap if you put too much in there. It'd be overpowering. So you just are using dashes or you know, a quarter of an ounce at the most or something like that. So in a way, to me, when I was, you know, reading about this, it's almost like a garnishment enhancer, because a lot of times your garnish is to the smell that you get with the drink, and that's kind of what this is. So I don't think you're adding it for a whole lot of flavor. It's more of an odor than that enhances the flavor, almost like smoking a drink or something like that.
It is definitely like the Aviation recipe that I learned when I started bartending. It's sort of like a split sweet daisy. So, you know, when we say daisy, we mean like a sour where the sweetness is coming from a liqueur. So you've got your base spirit, your gin, that's two. You've got your citrus, that's lemon, that's 0.75. And then you're splitting your sweet element, and you're doing half maraschino and just a quarter creme de violette. That's how I was taught the Aviation. I think that makes a very good Aviation. It is dry and it is floral. And ultimately, some people like don't love dry and floral. Those are two things that are kind of divisive in the cocktail world. But that's the drink, and I kind of love that about it. You know, there are people that will try to perfect the Aviation, and they'll add in simple syrup, or they'll use things like creme de Yvette that have more vanilla notes, more fruity notes. They're like, oh, it needs fruit, it needs vanilla. It's like, no, it kind of is what it is. And if you like floral and you like dry, it's fantastic. If you don't like those things, it's not for you. There are a million other cocktails for you. Let the Aviation be the Aviation.
It's just like, if you don't like bitter, then don't drink a Negroni, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And there are variations on the Negroni that you will enjoy. But the classic Negroni is good as it is if you've got that palate. And I feel the same way. And that's maybe why creme de violette has had a bit of a rough history, because it just does one thing, and it gives you a really strong floral flavor. And that is a time and place ingredient and a beautiful color. You can't short the color on it, but that's kind of you can't use enough creme de violette to get enough color in your drink without having your drink taste like you're just Like, if you use enough creme de violette to get a deep purple color in your cocktail, your drink's going to taste like you're just drinking perfume, which is not good. Nobody likes that.
No, it should just be a hint of the color in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is. Like, it's a beautiful, made correctly, it's just a beautiful, light blue, just kind of gray blue color. It's really beautiful. I love a proper aviation. And you know, it's one of those bottles where if you like floral, I would say that. If you don't like floral, if you don't like lavender, if you don't like rose, do not invest in a bottle of creme de violette. But if you like those flavors, and you know, you mentioned earlier the aviation gin. It does take its name partially inspired by the cocktail, but and I love aviation. I want to preface that. Aviation is a great workhorse gin. It's a great martini gin. It's a great highball gin. It's a great tonic gin. It is not my favorite gin for an aviation cocktail. Because, you know, I've mentioned the super floral kind of nature of the cocktail. It really needs just a good, structured, dry, like London dry gin, which aviation is a little bit softer than that. You know, that original gin mm-hmm. that was used, the L. Bart gin, it's a very classic London dry. So I would recommend a Bombay Sapphire, a Beefeater, a Plymouth Dry. Like, those are the gins that are going to stand up to the floral notes, because the maraschino is also sweet. It's a little floral as well. You need the nice structured dryness from a London Dry to stand up to the sweet floral elements. It's important to the build.
Well, another good thing about it is it should last a long time, because you're putting in such a small measurement when you use it in a drink that it should sit on your shelf for a long time to use.
I have had the same bottle of – I have the Rothman & Winter Creme de Violette, and I've had it for – I think I've moved it to two different apartments at this point. It doesn't go bad. It's you know, it's got enough sugar in it that it's shelf-stable more or less for – I mean, I'm sure that they have some sort of statement about how long it lasts, but it's not going to go bad. It might lose some of its aromatics over time, but it will be
you
with
you.
You
can pass it down to your grandchildren.
It might change. I don't know. Some heavy, sweet liqueurs like that, they just sort of, like, condense, and they do change color slightly. Like Saint Germain does this. Like, old Saint Germain is a weird – this is only in, like, Barnard circles, but, like, old Saint Germain – starts to look darker in color and have like a funkier flavor, but it's good. So I don't know. Maybe I haven't hit up a bottle of creme de violette in a while. It's not going to spoil, I guess is my point. It might change flavor, yeah. But yeah, it's an investment, and it's not that expensive an investment. Again, I think it's like a $30 bottle of spirit. It's a very
well, bartender. I'm looking for a funky Saint Germain. Do you have any?
Yeah. No, I had one of the Saint Germain's rep tell me that, like, oh, do you have, like an old bottle? Because I had, like, an old bottle on my shelf that I hadn't used in a while. I was like, I don't know if I can use it because it started to turn kind of, like, brownish. And he's like, no, that's when you know it's good. Like, what does that mean? But it is, like,
it's... So you drink it first.
It's sweeter. It's got, like, strong honey tones to it, like a weird earthiness it didn't used to have. So, I don't know. That's just true for me. Probably something evaporates in it and gets more condensed. It's probably just that simple. But anyway.
It doesn't go bad. It just evolves.
It evolves, yes. if you like floral cocktails, or you're just curious about, you know, cocktail history, if you want a taste of history, I feel like the aviation is a great example of that. It is one of the last drinks sort of minted and beloved before Prohibition changed the game forever. And it's one that relies on the quality of its spirits. You can't use shitty anything in an aviation, or else it shows through. You need proper maraschino liqueur, you need proper creme de violette, you need proper gin, and you need fresh lemon, and then it's delicious.
Well, that sounds like an interesting drink and an interesting history.
Yeah. So... hey, you know, it's a little, maybe not quite in the holiday drink profile, but, you know, it's also, it's floral. It's, that can be celebratory. A little creme de violette in, like, Prosecco or bubbles is actually delicious. Like, it's a very easy thing to just throw in something to make a little spritz.
Oh, yeah.
It's delicious. Good and celebratory, yeah. And a beautiful color.
Just a little dabble, do you?
Yes. All right. Well, thank you for joining me on this little journey into the aviation's past. Thank you, Dad.
Well, thank you for having me. I learned about several things there that I knew nothing about. I never knew there was a violet craze going on, and we made violet candy, and everybody wanted to smell like violets and, you know, all super, that kind of stuff.
Super hot in the Victorian era to just look like you were dying and smell of violets.
Well, all right. So they just come by and throw violets on you.
Yeah.
Well, he's dead. Here's some violets.
I still think I would like to court that aesthetic. I think looking like I'm dying and smelling like violets sounds pretty hot. So that's cool. Thank you all for joining us on this show. Hey, we're going to be doing something special for the holidays, right, Dad?
Yeah, we're going to be a little blurb of neat is going to be on the Mabim Bam's Candle Nights that will air. It's a video one. It's not a live show. It's a, what do they call it?
What do you think they call it?
I don't know. It's not a live stream. It's a reality. I don't know what you call it, but it's all pieced together video clips.
Check us out on our reality.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do a little neat thing. We're going to do our thing that we do real quick, though.
A special, neat, holiday cocktail something for you on this year's Candlelights. So if you're a fan of that, you'll see us. If not, check it out.
Virtual. That's what I was searching for. It's virtual. It's a virtual candle night. My poor old brain couldn't pull up that word. I was trying to say we were on a reality show, but I knew that wasn't right. I got voted off the island.
It's all reality. It's fine. But yeah, we'll be there doing that. Speaking of places where they're doing that, if you want to find us on the internet, we are NeatBoozeCast on Twitter and Instagram. We are NeatBoozeCast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk about if you've had an aviation or if you have opinions about violets in general or reality, you can do that
at NeatTheBoozeCast group page on Facebook.
You want to do that. Alright, well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. Yeah. No violets were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Oh, that's true.
We didn't harm any. I mean, if you drink them, they're already dead. Dead violets. That'd be a good name for a band. Dead violets.
Violet, violence, violence, violet. Something there.
Violence on violets violently.